When the world is calling, getting there starts here. With over 55 nonstop destinations, including Montreal, and 20 nonstop flights a day to New York City, travel from Columbus is closer than you think. Start your trip at flycolumbus.com.
Nobody does it better than Regent Seven Seas Cruises. Enjoy all-inclusive, unrivaled luxury with unlimited shore excursions, indulgent cuisine, personalized service, and more aboard spacious all-suite ships. Visit rssc.com to experience the unrivaled.
Here, Bird Show.
I don't know how we've been back 4 days from vacation and Abby hasn't told us about the details of her almost being murdered in Greece.
Oh my God. Wait, when I tell you there were a good 5 minutes in Greece where I really thought I had made myself, well, maybe not made myself a victim. I really thought I was about to become a victim in Greece. Let me explain. So I'm what you'd like to call anxious. I like to prepare for all of the scenarios. And as a solo female traveler, I really had packed my suitcase to the brim with things that I thought were going to protect myself while I was in Greece. I got one of those door jams. So when I'm in my hotel by myself, I can jam the door. So if someone tries to like break in, they can't. I brought drink testing strips. I spent $40 on drink testing strips. So every time I got something from a bar, I could test to see if it had been drugged. Because it's one thing to get drugged in America and you're surrounded by your friends. But if you're in a foreign country with a bunch of women you don't know, yeah. You don't want to be in that kind of vulnerable position.
What can go wrong in the United States of America?
Yeah, I mean, I'm like, if I have been drugged in Jacksonville, Florida, I can probably get drugged in Hanya, Greece.
Listen, unless Liam Neeson is your dad, that was a smart move.
Exactly.
Smart.
Yeah, my dad, he's great. The only thing he's really good at is hitting golf balls and selling insurance. That's where the extent of his talents lie. So I'm in Greece by myself for the first couple of days. So for context, the trip had started on Monday, but I really wanted to get adjusted to the new time zone. So I was like, let me fly out a couple days early, book myself a nice hotel, and it'll be great by the time the trip starts on Monday. And funnily enough is some of the girls that I went to Ireland with had also had the same idea. So they were at a different hotel, but within the same time frame. So we thought, what a great idea. Let's go hang out at a beach together while we're here by ourselves. We're like, that would be weird. Like we're in the same city and we're not going to hang out. So we had spent all day at the beach together and we were planning on going out, maybe hitting a couple bars, grabbing dinner, doing the whole thing. And my hotel was about 20 minutes from where their beach hotel had been. They had like this really beautiful, nice private beach. And so I said, hey, I'm just going to go back, shower. I feel kind of gross. I'm going to get ready for the night and it'll be awesome. So they were like, no, we kind of want to go with you. Or why don't you stay here? We can all go together. And I'm like, no, I'm very comfortable like Ubering by myself. Like I'm just 20 minutes down the road. It's broad daylight. It's like 3 p.m. I'll see you guys in an hour and a half. No, like, fine. Go ahead.
And I want people to realize like as a single female traveling, this is what you are assessing every single risk. So the fact that you're in your head and you're like, it's 3 o'clock, it's daylight. I'm not like completely hammered. So you have to literally sit there and go through a checklist of how safe or how unsafe is this?
So I'm totally sober. Like we had just been hanging out at the beach all day and you know, we were about to not be sober later at the bars, but I was like, I just want to go back to my hotel and shower. Like I just need a couple of minutes to myself. So I call what the Europeans call a free now. They don't have Uber over in Greece. They have a app called Free Now, which is basically Uber, except it's a lot worse. And they connect you with taxis. So I call a Free Now. The Free Now picks me up. And this is a situation that I'm very comfortable with. I Uber all the time in Atlanta. I've Ubered in numerous cities by myself. I really have no fear doing this whatsoever. So I'm in the Free Now and I'm doing what I think most women do when they're in an Uber or a taxi by themselves. You're looking at the route, you have the app pulled up and you can see where the driver's going. You're kind of keeping an eye on it, but it's at the same time, like I'm so at ease, you know, I'm scrolling through TikTok, going back to the app and you know, I can see that I'm getting a little bit closer to the hotel. So like, I'm really not thinking anything of it. So this is when it gets scary. So I'm about 15 minutes into the ride. I have about 5 minutes to go and I'm getting a little antsy because I'm like, oh, I can't wait to get to my hotel and shower and do all the things. And I open the Free Now app and it says, thanks for riding. Rate us 1 through 5. How was your driver? Blah, 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 blah. Which if you've ever taken a rideshare app, you know that only happens when you get out of the vehicle. So basically this driver has ended the ride. So I immediately go, oh my God. He has ended this ride, so he cannot be tracked. He's saying that he's dropped me off somewhere, you know, because you have the freedom to do that when you're a driver. He has ended the ride. And I look up And Crete, even, I'm sure when you're thinking of Greece, you're thinking of like Santorini and all the hills and the beautiful blue and white buildings. Crete is kind of a rural island. It's a little deserty. It's very mountainous. There's like tumbleweeds and cacti. Like it's very, it kind of looks like a lot of like maybe the Virgin Islands when you kind of get away from the beaches and stuff. It's a little suspicious looking is all I'm going to say. I'm kind of in the middle of nowhere. And my heart starts to pick up a little bit. And I start to think, this is a little weird. I don't know where I am. And he's ended this ride. And he's pulling down a hill under an overpass. Ugh. And his car is kind of turning in a way that makes me think, I think he's about to pull over under this overpass. I think he's going to corner me into this wall. And I think as he's like, you know, he's taking a hit of his cigarette, I'm like, this guy looks like he's having a good day and he thinks he's about to have an even better day.
And are you having the inner debate here now? Like, when do I just open up the door and make a run for
That's
it?
That's exactly where I'm going at. Okay. Because then I look down and I realize, not that I'm victim shaming myself, but I look down, I'm in a revealing bikini top. You know, I've got a full face of makeup on. And honestly, like I look like the kind of person that you would want to make a victim. Not that what you're wearing ever matters, but I think that in that moment when I was thinking about the risks, I'm like, I kind of look like someone you would want to take advantage of.
And you said you're in like a rural area, but are there any houses, buildings
around?
There
is nothing around. So I'm thinking, even though I'm picturing myself getting out of the car and running, I don't even know where to run to. I don't know how to call 911. I don't even know if there's safety features on the Free Now app. Like when I tell you, I felt every blood vessel in my body come alive. That is how truly terrified I was. And I think the scariest part was I actually felt like in that moment, even though even though I plan on running, I really felt like this is a battle I'm not going to win. Like, I don't think I can outrun him. I'm tired. I don't know where I'm going. I'm wearing flip-flops. I don't know how to get myself out of this.
Can I just interject with something? I want for all the guys listening, like before you finish your story, whether or not whatever this guy's intentions were, they could have been the best of intentions. But this is what women feel and think when they notice anything off. So if you ever, I mean, I've known guys who will be jogging behind a woman at night and will yell, I'm just trying to pass you on the right, like, you know, and let them know. And that sounds stupid, but you don't know how much relief you have probably given that woman by addressing the fact that you're alone with them. And we know you're not all bad guys, but there's always the risk that there is one. And what Abby is experiencing is what so many women have experienced in situations when alone with strangers that they don't know.
Okay, we need to get back to the story because I need to know if you died or not.
So he's pulling under the overpass and I'm just starting to think, how far am I going to be able to run? Like, can I punch it? Like, what are my options here? And I grab the door handle. Like, that is how close I am to running. Like, I'm literally like, he's going slow enough down this hill that I think I could probably run out and not get too hurt. Like, the worst thing is that maybe I'm going to trip and fall, scrape my knee, and then I'm going to start running. And then hopefully I can give myself any kind of chance. So he pulls under the overpass and he passes it. And I think, okay, this gives me a little bit more space to run. I'm not getting cornered. And then I think, because I'm stupid, I didn't think to maybe text a friend. I'm like, okay, let me see where I'm at. Like, am I even near the hotel? Can I figure out what direction to run to?
And the anxiety is probably taking over, so you're not thinking clearly. There are some people in situations like that that can slow it all down and think clearly. Doesn't sound like you're one of those people. I'm certainly not.
Yeah, this is the most scared I've ever physically been in my life. So I open up the app, and I can see we're kind of headed towards the hotel, but he keeps missing the turns at the directions on Apple Maps is saying to take. Like, it says turn left, and then he would miss a turn. And so I'm sitting there, I'm like, oh my God, like, I think this is really about to happen. Like, I really think I'm about to become a victim. And finally, he makes like a random left turn again into another dirt road. And then all of a sudden, there's my hotel, Stella Island. And I go,
right?
And he pulls in. And the funniest part about this whole thing, because really for the last 5 minutes, I'm picturing this guy like strangling me or doing worse or whatever. And he just turns around and obviously in broken English, he goes, thanks for riding.
Had no idea the panic that was going on in your head.
He could not have been nicer. Right. He's got a cigarette in his mouth and he's like, enjoy your stay at Stella Island. And I'm like,
oh my God.
But it was one of those things where I had to go sit in the shower for like 30 minutes just to bring myself back to earth. Cause I'm like, you really don't know how vulnerable you are until you think you're about to become a victim. And it made me just so hyper aware of how quickly things can change. just from a normal day to this guy really could have been anybody and I could have been on the side of the road dead. So I'm happy. So happy to be alive.
Just so I am clear, you did not die.
Yeah, I think I'm still alive. Okay. I'm pretty sure.
So this is not your ghost. This is you.
I don't know. It feels like my ghost. I'm still looking back on that. I'm like, am I still physically here?
The Burt Show.
Some crimes are never forgotten. Others are lost to history. Those are the ones we focus on in Crimes of the Centuries, a history meets true crime podcast revisiting murders, trials, and frauds that once dominated headlines. I'm Amber Hunt, your host and a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. If you like true crime that feels both cinematic and historical, find Crimes of the Centuries wherever you get your podcasts.
Wasn't really annoyed with the first message that came in about this, but I found myself getting increasingly annoyed when there was like six of them that kind of said the same thing. And I'm going to read one of them to you that is going to be the example of all the others. But it basically was saying something like, hey, Bert, you're always talking about health and fitness and working out and stuff like that. And I feel like you are being totally PC about Cassie and her decision to be on Ozempic, and you're not being authentic. So that's how it kind of went yesterday, right? And for those that don't know, you want to sort of repurpose what we've talked about for the last couple of days, because people generally have been very supportive.
Yeah, in a nutshell, I've struggled with weight issues my entire life. And the past few weeks, I've been thinking, well, actually a few months, I've been thinking about starting a semaglutide, a GLP-1 like Ozempic, to help with the weight loss, because I do have polycystic ovarian syndrome, which is basically, it's like a disorder that it, one of the side effects is it's hard to lose weight, right? And so I've struggled with that as well. So we did a, I asked if it would be cheating almost to take a GLP-1 when I feel like I haven't been able to fully commit myself to the gym and like a diet change. I've done dabbling. I've made some changes, but I just don't have the time, but something's got to change. This is a tool. Should I use it or am I making a mistake essentially?
And I think you've been so great about communicating the inner struggle that you've had about it. You feel like sometimes like you're taking a shortcut or maybe you're cheating. You've been fantastic about it, right?
Thanks.
So I started to get these DMs and I'm going to use this one specific one as the example of the others that I received. And I'm going to read you to you the response I had to it as well. I was taking a lot of deep breaths. I was taking a lot of deep breaths yesterday. Bert, how do you really feel about Cassie going on Ozempic? As a guy that works out all the time and is a self-described gym rat, I feel like you get very quiet when she talks about it. Wondering if you are honest, how you feel about it. It sounds like I live a very similar life as you, and I have strong feelings about GLP-1, and I think many are just afraid to speak out for fear of looking like you're fat phobic. So how do you really, capital letters, how do you really feel? And this is what I wrote back, and then we can have a nice debate about it. I think this was probably the fifth of the sixth one, and I was starting to get a little very annoyed. What does it matter how I feel about it, is what I wrote back. What I'm invested in is Cassie feeling good about herself and being healthy and happy according to Cassie's definition of what healthy and happy looks like. How she gets there is inconsequential to me. I've never had to deal with weight issue. I'm blessed with pretty good weight genes and food has never been a priority for me. So I can't possibly understand Cassie's relationship or struggle with food or body image. You know who knows Cassie best? Cassie. I love my friend no matter what she looks like, and I love and respect her so much for choosing to share this part of her life with you guys. I think you're focusing on the wrong part of her journey, is what I wrote yesterday.
That's really beautiful. Thank you.
I just don't, I think what I was getting annoyed by was, and especially with everything that was going on in the world yesterday, which we talked about earlier, people digging in on an opinion and having tunnel vision on it. And there's so much discord when, and so much opinion, strong opinion on other people's lives that I'm just about here with it. It doesn't matter to me. I think as a friend, I have told you my concerns about GLP-1. You're way smarter than I am. You've done the research on it. You know what's best for you. That's all you can do. I love this woman. And if this is the way that she wants to be happy and run her life, then so be it. What does it matter what my opinion is?
I think more than smartness, you have something that a lot of people are missing, and that's empathy. And I think that no matter the subject, we've sort of lost our ability to put ourselves in someone else's shoes and realize there are parts of the story we may not know. When it comes to semaglutides, and one thing I didn't really talk about yesterday, but I saw over and over again in the comments, was people talking about the food noise. And if you don't know what that means, it's thinking about food all the time. You finish breakfast immediately. What's for lunch? When am I going to plan out? Your day is planned out. I'll go to lunch with friends and look at what they, the portion size that they eat, and I will try to match it, and I'll be starving. And then I'll go home and I'll cry because I'll be like, why can't I just be normal? Why can't I eat the same thing? Why can't I have like a salad and feel full? I know that's what I'm supposed to do, but the rest of the day I'm miserable and I'm hungry. I eat toast. If I don't eat protein with it, I am so ravenous. I won't be able to think straight until I get myself to the nearest restaurant and scarf down whatever I can. These are the challenges that really attracted me to GLP-1s. And it's hard because that's not as universal of a conversation as just losing weight and being healthy. But it's not, and you know, I don't blame people because I fell into this trap too. I saw Hollywood using it and I'm like, you guys are just using it for vanity's sake, just to lose weight. There's no, like, for the most part, doesn't seem like there's any health implications there for you. I don't want to buy into that weight loss culture where you have to be skinny to be successful. But when I look at it from my peace of mind, from being able to eat a normal sized portion, which you are medically supposed to eat, and feel full and satiated off that and not have to have a ton of it. And I know people are like, well, you can shrink your stomach. I've tried that. I've tried all of that. Okay. It doesn't work that way for people. So when you're not someone who has to go through it, when you're not someone who struggles to make time or struggles, like I eat healthy and then I'm still hungry and I got to get a snack an hour later, when that's not your reality, it's very hard to step into someone's shoes who it is the reality, who the call of the ice cream from the freezer is so loud, I have to physically remove myself from the vicinity to ignore it. And then it's still in the back of my head. And then I'm spending my time rationalizing how I can eat that ice cream if I cut other things out of my diet, or can I go to the gym? Can I work out? Well, if I eat the ice cream today, then tomorrow I don't have to. It's such, like, I sit here and I'm counting how many pounds a week I can use. I used to sit in college lectures and be like, okay, it's September. And instead of paying attention to econ, I would do calculations on how many calories I could cut and how much weight I could lose by the next May, by spring break, because that was all I thought about. Because food wouldn't release it. I would be in the middle of, like, I can remember a 3-hour seminar and being like, we get a break in the middle. That's enough time for me to run to the canteen and get a salad. And I'll load it up with beans so I won't be hungry again. And then at the end of the seminar, I was hungry again. When you don't think about food 24/7, when maybe you don't like food, or maybe when it's not hard for you to eat portion sizes, it's very hard to understand why somebody would need a GLP-1 or something like that to help them. And I think Abby put it beautifully the other day. Something in my body is just not functioning the way that it should typically. It's not a moral failing of mine. And it's very hard to separate that out when weight is such a hot topic in our society, and how you look, people place value on being skinny. And so when you talk about taking a drug to lose the weight, I think it's very easy for people to be like, well, that's the cop out. You just need to work out and eat healthy. And that's not always the case for everybody. Mm-hmm. And that's the position I find myself in. And that's the reality I'm finally allowing myself to accept, that it's not a moral failing of mine. It's my body needs extra help. I'm inflamed. I'm not comfortable. I've made changes. Sometimes I see it, sometimes I don't. I don't have a life set up now where I can consistently get to the gym. And I know people will argue, you need to make yourself a priority. I hate that phrase. I would love to make myself a priority, but I have children. I have a job. It is not feasible for me to do that at this moment unless I get up at 3 a.m. to try and work out. And you know what? I'll say it. I'm not willing to do that. I'm not willing to wake up at 3 a.m. to go to the gym so that I can go to bed at 10 p.m. after my kid is up half the night and just destroy my quality of life that way. So when I'm looking at the situation, I'm like, well, there is this tool out here that I could use to help kickstart things until things get a little more into a normal cycle and I can start doing some of these other things. And that's why I fought it for so long. But seeing the people online talking about the food noise being quieted, their inflammation going down, their blood, like their cholesterol levels dropping. I have friends who are taking it because they have a family history of heart attacks and they want to avoid that. It's so much more than just weight loss. There are so many other factors that come into play, and seeing how the impact it has had on regular people's lives versus celebrities. Regular people who are like, I can run with my 5-year-old now because I lost some weight. My inflammation went down. I can breathe better. I started hitting the gym more because I felt inspired. And I want you to know, I would say 90% of the comments that came in from people who have successfully used a GLP-1 or a semaglutide like that say, hey, you also have to match the lifestyle. You need to drink water, you need to eat protein, and you need to work out. It's not a magic fix. So everyone, it seems, who's taking it, who has reached out, is very well aware you must change your lifestyle along with this drug. It is not a magic pill. But for them, the wins that they have had, they'll mention the weight loss, but I can hear when the emotion and the words that they use, the wins are because they're around for their kids. The wins are because they've been trying to get their cholesterol down for years and now they're able to, and now their risk of heart disease has gone down. The wins are they feel good about themselves in their bodies finally. It's not about how they look. In fact, I don't think I've seen one comment that says, I like what I see in the mirror now. And that is why those drugs are important, because when you are a person who is healthy and doesn't struggle with food, the answer seems very obvious, right? Calories in versus calories out. But when you are a person who struggles with food and whose body on top of that doesn't function and process food the way it's supposed to, especially with blood sugar, something like a GLP-1 can be quite literally life-changing. And so I respect what you say, Bert, about the research, and I agree with you on a lot of that too. I'm very hesitant to use new drugs. I put off antidepressants and anti-anxiety pills for years because I was worried about what would happen to me. And that was one of the best things I ever did for myself, was getting on Effexor. It changed my life. And so now I'm trying to look at this and I'm like, is this perhaps another tool that I in my head have vilified because Hollywood is abusing it and been like, that's bad. I don't need to buy into that. When actually, maybe this is a tool that was specifically created for people like me to help me. And it's very hard to step back, especially when there is morality on it. You feel like sometimes as a fat person, you failed, that you're not as dedicated, that you don't have the self-discipline, that you're fat and you're lazy and you just don't care. And you're shoving whatever down your gullet. That's not true for so many people. And yet we carry that shame and stigma. And so making a choice like this, it does sometimes, even though I would sit here and tell everyone else it's not cheating, but when it comes to yourself, mm-hmm. It's you hold yourself to a different, I won't even say different standard. It's not a standard. You hold yourself to the lies that you've told yourself. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to break out of that. And I appreciate you perhaps don't agree with GLP-1s, but what I love is that you're like, that's right for Cassie in that moment. She knows what's right for her. And I support her as my friend. And that's, I think, all anybody could ask.
Yeah. And I hope you don't feel like, because I feel like we all are like this. When we have this kind of job, sometimes I feel like we have to defend our actions. You don't have to defend living your life, man. You're the president of your own life. You pioneer your own way. And don't ever feel pressured, because I'm so appreciative that you share this journey on the show with us, because there are so many people going through the same one. Don't feel like you got to defend it, man. This is your life.
Thank you, Bert. Thank you.
It's the Bert Show.
The Bert Show.
Some crimes are never forgotten. Others are lost to history. Those are the ones we focus on in Crimes of the Centuries, a history meets true crime podcast revisiting murders, trials, and frauds that once dominated headlines. I'm Amber Hunt, your host and a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. If you like true crime that feels both cinematic and historical, find Crimes of the Centuries wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're going to get into Gen X versus Gen Z trivia here in just a second, but I must tell you about this. That new Charlie Sheen documentary on Netflix.
Does not disappoint.
So good.
Wait, really?
Dude, he is a mess.
Yeah.
His life has been such a mess, and he is so eager and willing to tell every ugly detail of his life that it's really good.
As long as I feel like it's not glorified, And it's just like owning up to your mistakes and missteps. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think he does that along the way. Okay. I think there's something that comes with age where you look back at your life and you're like, well, I certainly wouldn't do that now. Yeah. But he was, God, that Hollywood lifestyle, man.
It's crazy.
And you're probably too young to even remember when Charlie was like young and doing the whole like 80s and 90s movies. And he was at the height of his career and the partying. Woo! It was out of hand.
Yeah. I would say Gen Z best knows him from Two and a Half Men and also hashtag winning.
Yeah, that was a time.
The Tiger Blood.
But even like you've seen Ferris Bueller's Day Off, right?
Yeah, is he in? No, that's Emilio Estevez. No? Who?
Ferris Bueller's Day Off was him with Jennifer Grey and they're both at jail.
It's a bit part that
he has. So it's a small role.
It's a small role.
Yeah. Very, very small role.
I've seen the movie like once, so I can't say that I'd remember it.
God, it's really good. It's worth watching. I haven't gotten through the whole thing yet, but I think you'll be pleasantly surprised by it.
For me, I most remember him like from those heydays for Major League.
Yeah.
That those are the movies. Like when I think Charlie Sheen, because you know how there's certain actors depending on like your age and nostalgia and where you were. But like when I hear Charlie Sheen, I don't think Two and a Half Men. I immediately picture him as that wild pitcher in Major League.
I'm older than you, so I remember him in Wall Street. That was such a good movie. He was so good in that. And Platoon also, which he was so brilliant in too, but it's worth watching.
Was he like a serious actor at some point?
Oh, yeah.
I just remember him as being kind of like a buffoon.
No. He was a real deal. For sure.
Really, really good actor.
Really good.
The more you know.
All right, time for Gen X versus Gen Z trivia. It's getting a little bit tight because Gen X is making a run. All right, we're only three behind. Okay? We're only three behind.
Every day, if we get one more point, we'll finally be up by two so we can in this thing.
Thank God.
I am leaning on you today because I am in a weird, dark place.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I'm thinking clearly today, so this is all you.
I'm really not doing much better, but okay.
No, we're not. We're all laughing just so we don't cry.
Like, I had wine on a Wednesday, which I never do, but needed a glass of wine,
right,
which in the driveway with the neighbors turned into two, and then I come inside, and then last night I had the wine cries, so I'm on the couch, and it wasn't like the full-blown sob. It was like the eyes tear up, and like you're able to like kind of keep it within, and my husband's just like, something's wrong, and I'm like,
everything's wrong.
The world is burning. Oh,
man, I went, you know, the Charlie Kirk thing happened yesterday. He got assassinated yesterday. So with our job, you have to sort of know what is going on in the world. And then when I signed on Instagram and TikTok, and then all the stuff that was going on in Charlotte also with the death in Charlotte.
And the school shooting in Colorado.
And the school shooting, everything that I was just scrolling on was just sucking the soul out of me yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I've got a hangover today.
Yep.
So let's try to get out of it. All right. Gen X will be trying to answer questions that Gen Z know for sure because they're from their generation and vice versa. Hey, Mikey.
Hi.
How you doing, man?
Better than you guys. You guys are in a mentally ill state. We might have a chance today.
Mikey's like, yes, I'm going to capitalize on the fact that they are depressed and mentally ill.
Well, best news I heard all day.
Well, even in our best state, we're losing. So, you should run away today.
All right, you guys ready?
Yep.
Gen X, we're going to start with you guys. Who won Best Pop Artist at the MTV VMAs?
Who won that?
Best Pop Artist?
We literally just said that we were hoping none of these questions came up.
Yep, and I gave you a day to do your research.
Best Pop Artist.
Come on, man.
Okay.
Come on, Kristen.
Okay.
Pop station.
Come on.
All right. So, Best Pop Artist. I know Lady Gaga and Bruno Mars won for Best Duet or whatever.
Sabrina Carpenter?
Yes, she was holding three. I saw a picture of her holding three. And I also remember Tate McRae's performance, which was incredible. But
not good enough to win.
But I'm going to say because of that Sabrina holding the three, I'm going to say go with that.
Sabrina Carpenter. Sabrina Carpenter!
That is correct.
Yeah! Oh! Yeah! I'm out.
All right. Gen Z. Uh-huh. What was MTV's slogan when it launched in 1981?
MTV slogan, we play videos. I feel like I should know this. You know music news.
I don't know, MTV, music starts here or something.
Music starts
it's not a bad.
That's
it's
really
not a bad guess.
It's not a bad guess.
I actually think that's better than the actual slogan.
Can you hear the theme music in your head? Dun, Yep.
I can see Kurt Loder doing the MTV news.
Yeah. Wasn't there like the moon with the astronaut dude?
Yeah. Moon man.
That's so annoying. They got to recall something that happened Sunday. This happened 35 years ago.
Oh, it's so unfair.
MTV.
Music for your bones and videos for your ears.
Yeah, let's go with that one.
Okay. Aren't videos supposed to be for your eyes?
I messed it all up.
Music for your bones.
I want my MTV.
Yeah, man.
I've never heard of that in my life.
I want my MTV. Right,
so we're now only two down, dude. Yeah. Two. We're making a move. We're making a move. Go seniors.
We're just going to let them win so we can end this.
I know. I'm feeling bad for that.
Question two. Gen X. Which artist became famous from SoundCloud before topping charts with the song Lucid Dreams?
Lucid Dreams, Kristen!
Yes! You know what my favorite type of dream is?
Lucid!
You know, the lucid one.
That was all right. Give us the question one more time.
Which artist became famous from SoundCloud before topping charts with their song Lucid Dreams?
Can I Google it real quick?
No. No.
I don't know why this popped in my head, but... I'm like, I want to go with my gut like reaction because I know Doja Cat got famous with the whole Moo song. Mm-hmm. So it makes me wonder if it's Doja Cat with SoundCloud.
I got nothing. So
I mean, that's the only thing I have like in my brain right now.
I thought that cow song was her first, though.
The Moo song was freaking hilarious.
Lucid Dreams.
That sounds like a Post Malone song. But I don't think he got his start from SoundCloud.
Damn it, Kristen. You're better than this.
I know.
All right, hey, you choose Doja Cat or Post Malone. Those are the only two I got in my banging around my bean.
Post Malone.
Incorrect. It is Juice WRLD.
Okay, thank God it wasn't Doja Cat.
It's so funny because I thought about that when he was talking, or when Jackson was talking about Lucid Dreams. I was like, oh, I love that Juice WRLD song.
Yeah. Oh, shout out to Juice WRLD, okay. RIP, right?
Yeah, he did.
Absolutely. I said that my 18-year-old nephew Lucas loves Juice WRLD. And then I'm like, wait a minute. Did I get that messed up?
Yeah,
all right,
he did.
Gen Z. Which singer shocked the world with his death in 1977 at the age of 42 from heart failure?
Elvis?
Like no information.
Elvis.
He wasn't 40. He 1972? But he couldn't have been 42, could he?
He died in the 70s, didn't he? Read the question
that's
again,
probably
guys.
Right.
Which singer shocked the world with his death in 1977 at the age of 42 from heart failure?
I don't know if Elvis was that shocking, though. Did you see his last performance?
he just bloated
as could be.
He might have been dead on stage.
He was just like super constipated.
I don't hate that answer. He died in like his tennis court bathroom.
But it was from something drug related that could be related to his heart.
That's probably true.
His achy, breaky heart. Oh, that's Billy Ray Cyrus.
Oh my God.
I'm okay with that. Let's try it out.
Elvis.
That is correct.
Hey, all right.
I love Kristen going, ha, Elvis.
That was good. It threw me off. I was like, wait, no, I'm pretty sure he died in the 70s.
That's a boomer question.
You silly youngsters, Elvis. Yeah, it was Elvis. He did die in the bathroom, but wasn't it like from... complication from like constipation and
stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think it's because it made his heart.
Yeah.
Like it's heart failure, but it was because of
that. He got up in the middle of the night and wanted to play tennis with, like, he got one of his, like, butlers to play tennis with him.
I don't believe
that. And he went and died on the toilet.
That dude hadn't played tennis in a long time.
But you didn't even know this 5 seconds ago.
I don't know the dates, Abby.
Gen X. What movie just went from streaming where it launched back into movie theaters? Sorry, let me rephrase. Okay. I phrased that wrong. What movie just went from streaming where it launched to movie theaters?
Streaming where it launched to movie theaters.
Do you think it's an Adam Sandler movie? Because all of his debut on Netflix. Or you think that's just an exclusive Netflix deal?
Yeah, I think that's an exclusive Netflix deal. It's streamed and then went.
It was so popular, they brought it to movie theaters.
Oh, God.
So which movie that debuted on streaming was so popular that they moved it to movie theaters?
Damn it.
We
spend entirely too much time online to not know these simple, simple questions.
Yeah, but these things, this is not what my algorithm is feeding me.
I'm noticing Bert's contribution is always just repeating the question.
I got Sabrina Carpenter right, man.
Okay, yeah,
he did.
All right.
Yeah, he did.
Good for you.
It went from streaming to movie theaters.
To movie theaters.
I don't know, man.
I don't freaking know either.
was it? Damn it.
K-pop Demon Hunters.
Oh, really? I didn't know
on
that.
On Netflix.
That's like the fifth question you've given about that freaking movie.
I know. I'm trying to give you some gimmies. I figure like it's top of mind.
All right, last one for you guys.
Gen Z, what 1977 sci-fi film became the highest grossing movie of the decade and launched a blockbuster franchise that is still seeing spinoffs today get nominated for Emmys?
I'm thinking E.T. Also, who's Walter Cronkite?
Alien? You think it's Alien?
Sci-fi. I don't know what that is.
What does Walter Cronkite have to do with it?
Who's
I don't know. It just popped in my head and it feels like it might be right.
I've recognized I'm just a team of one.
yeah, this one you definitely
are. Wait, can we have the question again?
Yeah.
How's that not E.T.?
Okay, so what... Oh, hang on, I lost it. What 1977 sci-fi film became the highest grossing movie of the decade and launched a blockbuster franchise that is still seeing spinoffs today get nominated for an Emmy? A spinoff nominated for an Emmy currently.
Clearly Walter Cronkite starred in it.
You think maybe it's like The Conjuring or something?
How is it not? That's like a horror movie, right? How is it not E.T.?
Well, because there's not like spinoffs of E.T.
Ever?
Yeah, name one E.T. spinoff. Go.
E.T. 2.
T.E.E.D.
E.T. Totally different movie.
Terrestrials also tile dysfunction.
Didn't E.T. came out in the 90s because Drew Barrymore's in it.
No, it didn't.
No, it didn't. The 80s. Drew Barrymore's
Kristen,
in it.
You're not.
Sorry.
Why are you giving hints?
Sorry.
They're our opponents.
I already knew E.T. wasn't the answer. Yeah,
she wasn't going to say E.T.
The sci-fi. I don't know why my brain immediately went to Alien. I've never seen Alien.
Now, I don't care about the scores enough anymore. I want you to say Alien. I want it to be E.T. So I
but
can
it's
be
not E.T.
Man.
I'm telling you, it's not E.T.
So you're competing against your own teammate.
I am. I'm going against everybody now.
This is the most Gen Z ever.
I'm in an island of one. Sci-fi.
Need an answer.
Sharknado?
You're going to kick yourself.
I'm going to kick myself?
That's all I'll say.
Is that a hint?
No. No, it's not. It's just
a
prediction.
Movie.
It's the Cronkite Chronicles.
Okay,
that could be right.
I'm just going to go with Alien.
Is that your final answer?
I mean, that's my only answer.
That is incorrect.
Can I guess?
Yes.
Is it Star Wars?
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh. I never even thought of that.
Star Wars?
Yes.
There's one nominated for an Emmy?
Andor, right now, the television series is nominated for an Emmy.
Well, you almost got it right because Walter Cronkite played Han Solo.
Exactly. Yes. I knew I was onto something.
It was Chewbacca.
Oh, my bad.
Dummy.
You've closed the gap. Gen X is up to 18 and Gen Z is at 21.
Still three.
Yeah, there's nothing changed.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, The Bird Show. Time to get buzzed on the hot goss from Hollywood with Abby. It's The Bird Show's entertainment buzz.
Ed Sheeran says he's been working really, really hard on an album, but he doesn't want it to come out until he dies. He recently did an interview with Apple Music's Zane Lowe, and he revealed that he is currently arranging a posthumous album called Eject that will only come out when he passes away.
Eject is the album in the will.
It's so funny, the image of me.
It's actually in my will, and Cherry gets to pick the tracks for it. It's fully in there if I were to go tomorrow.
What is? I don't understand. What do you mean? It's in your will?
My will of wishes is to make a record out of all the songs from the age of like 18 to when I pass away.
Choose
the 10 best. And it's like, imagine if Paul McCartney dies and there's like early 16-year-old Beatles recordings right up to it, the 10 best of like his entire career. Lots of people won't like that of me, but there'll be lots of my fans that would find that super interesting.
And it only comes out...
after I'm dead, yeah.
So his wife, his name is Cherry, so she'll be the one picking out all of the tracks for this album. And while I like the idea of this... I'm like close to Ed Sheeran's age and I'm an Ed Sheeran fan. Mm-hmm. So it's like, what if I go before Ed Sheeran? I just never get to hear Eject because you, for some reason, wanted it to drop after you died. Like, what are you hiding in your lyrics, Ed Sheeran? What's hiding in that ginger hair of yours?
Well, it gives you motivation to stay alive.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, but sometimes it's not your choice. Did you hear an hour ago? I almost got killed in Greece. Sometimes you get taken before it's your time, you know? And I'm a big Ed Sheeran fan, so I'm a little upset. I'm like, what secrets is he keeping from us that will only come out when he's dead? And what if Cherry dies before him?
Well, I think it's actually sweet looking at it from like a husband-father aspect that after I'm gone, I still want to make money for you guys so you can release this album because, you know, it and this always happens.
happens after like a major artist passes away, you see an influx of purchases of their songs or whatever. So it's kind of like his way of looking after his wife and child after he's gone.
Yeah, this man is like a billionaire, though. He has one of the highest grossing tours of all time. You need more money?
Well, here's what
always.
Here's how I'm thinking about it also is how many people try to take the songs that we never heard from Prince, which he never wanted released, but then he passes away and they're like, oh, we can make money off of this. Ed is clearly telling you these are going to be the songs that I want released and you get nothing else. Mm.
People in the entertainment industry clearly need better accountants because Whoopi Goldberg is also thinking about retirement and her future as she, you know, continues to age. And she said that she's going to continue to host The View, but the only reason she's continuing to work is because she literally can't afford to retire.
Do you ever think about slowing down and enjoying this?
Yeah, but who can afford to do that? Who can afford to start? You know, if you don't marry well, you got to keep working.
I feel like you might be one of the people that could afford it by now.
No, not by now.
What? Are you just Googling so crazy? How much she's worth?
Huh?
Are you about to Google how much she's worth? Because I'm curious.
She's such an icon. I can't believe her of all people would be like, I have to keep working.
Maybe she was just being tongue-in-cheek funny.
She is worth...
allegedly.
$60 million.
Okay.
$60 million. But these are never accurate. My son has done this on me before, and the figure is not close.
No, because apparently I'm worth more than you, and I'm like, I'd like to call BS on that.
Is it lower or higher than it actually is? Like, if I Google you, is it lower or higher?
Yes.
Let's just say both. The internet says I am worth more than Bert. May I remind you, he just spent his holiday in Scotland and I was in PCB.
But that's the only thing I spend money on.
I know.
No, you were not in PCB. You were in 30A. That is like the Maldives of the South.
I could walk to PCB.
The Maldives of the South.
Have you been? The net worth in 30A, dystopian. It's pretty wild. No, so.
And they're really nice beaches. I'm joking.
All right, for more stories, head to the Burt Show podcast on your favorite listening platform.
Hey, the Burt Show.
Some crimes are never forgotten. Others are lost to history. Those are the ones we focus on in Crimes of the Centuries, a history meets true crime podcast revisiting murders, trials, and frauds that once dominated headlines. I'm Amber Hunt, your host and a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. If you like true crime that feels both cinematic and historical, find Crimes of the Centuries wherever you get your podcasts.